Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply. Not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.
From KQED.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. Western monarch butterflies all but disappeared from coastal California last fall, but there are now promising signs of an uptick in numbers. The Pacific Grove Monarch Sanctuary, which didn't see a single monarch last winter, recently counted over 13,000 butterflies. As citizen scientists begin this year's Thanksgiving monarch butterfly count, we want to talk with some experts about why we're seeing this mostly unexpected rebound in monarch butterflies and what it might mean for their future. Joining us are Emma Pelton, a conservation biologist and Western monarch lead at the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation. Welcome, Emma.
Thanks so much for having me.
And we also have David James, an entomologist at Washington State University, who recently completed some research on these butterflies. Welcome, David.
Thank you.
David, let's start with you. Just kind of lay out the big picture here. What's been happening with Western monarch butterflies?
Well, as we probably all know, that there's been a very great decline in numbers over a number of years, but particularly over the last couple of years. And we count monarchs at their overwintering sites in the winter on the California coast. So we've had this very big decline. And then this year, the numbers have gone back up again, which has surprised a lot of people. And it's a very promising sign. It doesn't mean to say the whole thing has been turned around and monarchs are going to become very common again, but it is a hopeful sign. And also we've had the occurrence of winter breeding in the Bay Area for the first time in significant numbers just last winter and possibly this winter as well.
David, can you tell us specifically how you do this kind of butterfly count? Like in your work, how did you actually go like, okay, this is how many butterflies we're seeing. Did you tag butterflies? Just tell us more about sort of like the method section of your research.
Well, the count has been done for more than 20 years, 25 years now, and it's all due to the efforts of citizen scientists. People that are interested in monarch butterflies go to the overwintering sites, which we know they're the same sites every year along the California coast from San Diego to north of San Francisco. And every year around Thanksgiving, a lot of these citizen scientists do the counts. And so that's why we have this very excellent data set on numbers over the years, because the butterflies conveniently roost in the same trees and the same sites, and we can count them.
Yeah. We talked with a scientist a few months ago who'd been doing these counts for 50 years. We would love to hear from you. Are you a citizen scientist who's been involved in one of these monarch butterfly counts? We'd love to hear from you. For the rest of the general population, what are your questions about how monarch butterflies are faring? And maybe more importantly, have you noticed changes in your local monarch population? You can give us a call now at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Emma Pelton, conservation biologist. What do we think had been driving down the monarch counts? Is it climate change? Is it changes in habitat? Is it sort of like most ecological things, all of the above?
Yeah, I think that this is one of those areas where we cannot point to one thing and say this is the silver bullet reason. And like you said, this is true of so many wildlife species that we're seeing decline as we have this, we face this biodiversity crisis, not just in insects, but across a lot of our groups of animals like birds and mammals. And so when we're thinking about what are the factors, there are the things that we suspect are the most important, and then there are probably smaller factors. And so some research has really looked at this. And the big factors continue to be habitat loss, which is both the breeding habitat loss, the loss of native milkweeds, nectar plants across our landscapes, and then also the overwintering loss. So the forested groves that these butterflies rely on, as our community scientists are out right now, as David mentioned, doing those Thanksgiving counts. Those are really the two pieces that we think are very important. And then there's this overlay of pesticide use, both in our urban areas and how we garden and how we manage landscapes, and in our agricultural areas and how we grow food in this country. So those pieces have really been shown both in monarchs and in many other insects and butterflies in California and elsewhere to be the big drivers. And then we think climate change is making things worse. And it's probably adding kind of a you know, more of an uphill battle as we try to work on these habitat issues. So I think the important point is to make sure people know that they can make a difference by creating habitat and lowering their reliance on pesticides. And it's not all lost because we're facing a changing climate.
You know, Emma, one fact you didn't mention was the kind of parasites that, at least from my understanding, have been affecting monarch populations. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, there is a protozoan parasite that's known, the short name for it is OE, and it's spread really easily among butterflies when they land on a milkweed plant. It's on their bellies and they can transfer it. So I think everyone's a little more aware of a disease transfer now that we're
deep into COVID. They're going through their own COVID. Right.
So this is more of a contact, less of a respiratory issue. Mm-hmm. And these OE parasites can get to really high levels. And if they're at really high levels, they can be debilitating. It can kill a monarch. It can cause it to have a shorter life. It can't migrate as well. It doesn't have as many offspring. And so it can be really problematic. And it's part of why we're really concerned about some of this winter breeding in the East Bay. And then really, we've seen it for a long time in Florida, parts of the Gulf Coast, Southern California, where some of these OE rates can be really high. And we're worried that that could have a long-term negative impact on monarch populations. Mm.
We're talking about a promising start to the Thanksgiving count of Western monarch butterflies with Emma Pelton, conservation biologist and Western monarch lead at the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation, and David James, an entomologist at Washington State University. And we want to hear from you. Have you noticed changes in your local monarch population? Give us a call now, 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. Stay tuned for more on Monarchs and Milkweed after the break.
This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Welcome back to Forum. I'm Alexis Madrigal. We're talking about some surprisingly good numbers in the latest counts of Western monarch butterflies with David James, an entomologist at Washington State University, and Emma Pelton, a conservation biologist and Western monarch lead at the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation. David James, I wanted to ask you about this question of these kind of stable sedentary populations versus the migratory populations. I mean, one of the things I think captures people's imaginations about monarchs is they have these multi-generational migratory paths, you know, and they're these tiny creatures that cross continents. But what we're talking about here, at least what you, one of the things that you've been studying, are these populations that are just kind of hanging around Google's campus, right?
Yeah, sure. They've adapted to the warmer climate, I believe. I mean, Emma mentioned climate change, and there's no doubt that the climate, particularly in California, has warmed. And so last winter, actually the fall of 2020, you in California, and particularly in San Francisco Bay Area, had an extremely warm time of it. I mean, you had many fires in California, mm-hmm. and the temperatures were way above normal in September and October. And this is the time that the monarchs are migrating in from Pacific Northwest and elsewhere, heading towards the coast. And I believe that, you know, because of the very warm conditions, some of them got derailed, so to speak, and decided to set up breeding populations within the Bay Area. So it was, I think, a consequence of climate change or the warming climate. This year, of course, it's been much more normal, the temperatures that you've had down there. So I believe, you know, the butterflies have responded to that and are now on the coast in their traditional overwintering sites.
Yeah, you know, listener Robin writes, can you ask David more about the winter breeding of monarchs in the Bay Area? Where is this a good thing. And I think one of the questions that kind of Emma hinted at earlier is the presence of this parasite. It seemed like in your initial survey, there was actually a substantial amount of this parasite present in the monarchs that you found.
Yes. Well, we think the breeding population occurs throughout the Bay Area, or it did last year. It wasn't just confined to the South Bay. And yes, we did see large numbers of the OE parasite amongst the population we were looking at. So that is a concern. And as Emma mentioned, you know, there's a lot of research being done on the impact of this pathogen that's quite worrying. But most of the research has been done on the eastern US population. And unfortunately, we know very little about the western population in terms of OE and a lot of other factors too. So you know, it's something we need to be aware of, but we need more research on it, to be honest.
Yeah. Emma Pelton, I guess the question is, you have these huge, what I like to think of as herds of monarchs, and you have some of these what seem to be more sedentary populations, at least over one winter. Do you think that these populations will become distinct? Will the ones who've been staying around the Bay Area, will they decide to migrate at a certain point? What do we know about those kinds of triggers and the relationship between sedentary monarch populations and migratory ones?
I think the biggest thing to me is the mystery of it. And I say that not because it means we don't know anything, but I think there's a lot we're trying to figure out. As David said, there has not been as much research on Western monarchs, but as a whole, North American monarchs are incredibly well-studied butterflies. And so I'd like to put that plug in that there are so many other butterflies we're not always talking about and paying attention to. And those are really important. And so I think that the big thing with thinking about what we know about resident monarchs and migratory monarchs is that there is probably some interchange. We know they're in the same areas, you know, monarchs that are in the East Bay on milkweed right now, probably non-native milkweed. Those same monarchs might be interacting with any monarchs that may get through the winter and are going to migrate back into the Central Coast foothills and into the Central Valley in the spring. And so there is some interaction. And that's where we're worried about things like OE spread and disease spread. But whether or not they're the same butterflies and one of them decided to do this and one decided to do that, that's something that we're still learning a lot about. And community scientists and reports last year, you know, to David, to Xerces through our Western Monarch Milkweed Mapper Community Science Project, we're getting people to report this. And it's so cool. I love that I work on an animal that everybody can contribute to the knowledge gaining of. And there are two really cool studies that I'm aware of right now that are kind of getting underway. One is funded by Google for researchers Elizabeth Crone and Cheryl Schultz. And they're going to be doing kind of an in-depth look at this phenomenon in the East Bay starting in January. And then there's a genomic study by Chris Funk at Colorado State University, and that's funded by the Fish and Wildlife Service and others. And he's looking at salvaging dead monarchs to understand what the genetic differences or similarities are between these resident monarchs and the migratory monarchs. So I think we're going to learn a lot more pretty soon, but we don't quite have all the answers.
Let's bring in Jaime from Vallejo. Welcome to the show.
Thank you for taking my call. I'm actually going to, on the same lines that, you know, I'm an evolutionary biologist. And to me, I just wanted to figure out a little bit about the genetics about these two morphs. I mean, at least the ones that migrate and the resident ones. And the thing that I know is that these are not the same populations that migrate all the way down to Mexico, correct? I mean, like all these beautiful, you know, forests, you know, crowded with these butterflies. My question was, how much do we know about these overlap between these two morphs? And if you think there's any hybridization that might be happening between these two different forms? And we know that sometimes in birds, hybrids, particularly species that migrate, they get the wrong information and they can be migrating in different places that are not suitable for these populations. So what were your thoughts about that? And I thank you for mentioning the genomic work by Chris Funk, and we're looking forward to hear more about the genomic that comes out from this work. Thank
Man,
you.
I did not know that birds could get the wrong migratory information. Emma, let's start with you, and David, maybe take a crack at that one too if you have something to add at the end.
Great. Yeah, these are some big, interesting questions that I don't know that I have a great soundbite, but I do think one piece of this puzzle, so far the genetic work that's been published has shown that Eastern and Western monarchs, Eastern monarchs are born east of the Rocky Mountains and even into Southern Ontario, and they migrate to central Mexico near Michoacán, outside of Mexico City, and then really high elevation forests, really different than coastal California. And then Western monarchs are born west of the Rocky Mountains, in good years in the past, even in the Southern BC. And then they migrate down to that Pacific coast from Mendocino into even Baja. And so we see that those butterflies genetically have looked the same based on the current studies that are out there. But these are really different migrations. These are really different landscapes. And so there's definitely an active area of research to try and understand how these populations might be different. And if there's some phenotypic plasticity, to throw out some fancy science words for you all this morning. And I think—
I mean, Jaime's an evolutionary biologist. He's—
yeah, you can handle this. But yeah, I think the bird thing is a great example. We know that migratory birds, there are often parts of those populations that do something different and don't migrate or stick around. And that's normal with migrating animals, that some portion of them try different strategies. And sometimes those strategies are good. On some years they might be good, and other years they might not be good, and they may spread disease, or they may have kind of long-term detrimental effects in it. And it just kind of depends on the context.
Yeah. David, you want to add anything to that?
Yes, I think, you know, Emma's correct. The population really over the whole US is the same population. And there is some evidence that the butterflies in Mexico, when they leave in the spring, some of that population actually trickles onto the west side of the continent. So we actually get some of the eastern population coming into the west in the spring, into Arizona. And we see this most years.
That via tagging or just sort of like where they are?
I was just going to say it's more circumstantial evidence, finding monarchs that are looking very beat up early in the season in Arizona and theorizing that they've come a long way and probably come from Mexico. We unfortunately don't have any tagging data to confirm that, but it certainly looks like that is happening. And it would help explain why, as Emma said, the populations throughout the country are the same genetically. But also the important thing is about confusion about migration is that the butterflies respond to the environment. It's decline in day length that causes them to migrate. And so it doesn't matter where they are, they're still going to respond to the same environmental cues. And the landscape is going to affect their migration too. So the butterflies respond to the environment. And so really they shouldn't get confused, but you know, we're speculating here. Yeah. There's so much more research that's got to be done.
Jaime, thank you so much for that call. I want to add in Alicia from Oakland. Welcome to the show.
Hey, hi. My name is Alicia and I grew up in Pacific Grove in the 70s and 80s. And at that time, the monarch butterflies were every place. They absolutely would drip off the trees in the sanctuary, and it's really heart-wrenching to have witnessed their decline and to have them not show up, and so I'm really excited to hear that there is indeed a resurgence that's happening now. That it makes me very happy to hear.
Thank you for that call, Alicia. Emma Pelton, I think you probably want to say something about the scale of that resurgence relative to the scale of the millions that were there during the time when Alicia was in Pacific Grove.
Yeah, thanks for that. I think that this is where I have to caution our optimism. I think it's totally reason to celebrate. We have better numbers this year. I'm celebrating. I know many people are celebrating. But it's that issue of shifting baselines where even 4 years ago, we were seeing more monarchs. So this has really been a lesson the last few years as we've seen the population dwindle. As David kind of said at the beginning, we used to have over a million butterflies in the 1980s. That's when we have kind of the early estimates. So we know there were, 1, 5, 10 million butterflies. It depended on the year, probably before the 80s, into the 80s. The 90s, things kind of went crazy and the population started to crash. And that's similar to a lot of butterflies. And there's work out of Matt Forrester's lab and Art Shapiro's labs that have kind of pointed to a change in our pesticide use as maybe being part of that seismic shift. And then we really got into a new normal of hundreds of thousands of monarchs through the 2000s and 2010s. And that became kind of our baseline. People still thought it was a lot of butterflies, but it was actually a lot less than even a few decades before. And then the bottom really fell out in 2018, where we dropped below 30,000 monarchs. And then last year, below 2,000 monarchs. So we all
Which seemed like
really
it might be
nervous.
All over, right? Because yeah. you need a certain size of population to sort of maintain a healthy population.
Totally. And we don't know what that line is. It's been hypothesized that 30,000 is that line, but that's a guess. That's researchers giving their best guess. We haven't seen populations that are this migratory and have been that big drop so quickly and so severely. And so we're all wondering what was going to happen this year. Are there going to be 200 butterflies, or are there going to be 20,000, or are there going to be 200,000? And I think the good news is we're going to be well over 50,000. And, you know, we're all kind of hoping that it'll be much closer to what it was 4 years ago, but it's still not that hundreds of thousands or millions that we had.
Yeah. You know, Urich writes, a citizen scientist, I started participating in the counts back in 2019 and did not see hardly any. But now this year, I have seen at least four monarchs on three separate occasions in the East Bay, and I'm very hopeful after last year's frighteningly low numbers. I've heard that they are even being spotted in Half Moon Bay again. And Robin tweets, Emma mentioned a study in the East Bay starting in January. Is there a way to get involved in that? I see monarchs in my garden every day. Emma?
I can't speak for the researchers. I think that there may be a community science component. And if there is, probably the way to best contribute is to report what you see to the Western Monarch Milkweed Mapper Project. We're in iNaturalist, so you can report when you see a monarch or milkweed.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there. And can you just give us the name of those researchers one more time for people who...
Sure. It's Elizabeth Crone. She's a professor at Tufts. And then Cheryl Schultz, who's a professor at Washington State University.
Great. Urich tweets, we talk a lot about monarchs, but are they better indicators of all butterfly populations, or are they just the prettiest ones? We give them more attention and people know them by look. David James, what do you think? Are monarchs kind of an indicator species or merely sort of an aesthetic species?
They are certainly an indicator species, and it's just fortunate that people love monarchs and they're very attractive. So that, you know, makes them a flagship species, and they are truly a flagship species for the pollinator decline generally, not just butterflies. So yeah, they're extremely important in that role.
Yeah. You know, and this is sort of the eternal question of monarch support, which is we have a couple milkweed questions. I have three new milkweed plants in my garden. Are these microhabitats helpful? Can I add the caterpillars on them to the count? And another listener tweets, I work at a local nursery selling plants butterflies love. There are so many in the nursery lately, caterpillars and chrysalis. But everyone wants to keep buying the milkweed to keep them all year. Y'all need to let it go dormant naturally. Emma Pelton, what do you think?
Yeah, I think this is an area that kind of alluding to David's research that, you know, what's really an active area of question, how much are these winter breeding monarchs contributing to the population as a whole, or are they hurting the population? And maybe they're doing both. I think that that's on the table, that there could be short-term gains where there are more butterflies, but they're more diseased and they're maybe not very good migrators. So in the long-term, they could be problematic. So at the Xerces Society, we recommend people plant native milkweed, so we don't have this problem. Native milkweeds will naturally go dormant most years. And then if you have tropical milkweed, we'd recommend cutting it back in October and November to break that disease cycle, encourage those monarchs to migrate, and then let it grow back. So in January and February, you know that plant is there. So when those monarchs need somewhere to lay their eggs, it's available.
David James, do you have a different sense of this?
No, not really. I mean, the native plants are the best. But, you know, the tropical milkweed is playing a function and a role in keeping, you know, as Emma said, at least a short-term survival benefit for monarch populations in the Bay Area. Again, we just know so little about what is actually happening. So we don't really want to do anything drastic to disturb the success they apparently had last year. I mean, my study showed that the winter breeding population was very successful last year. They were able to survive the Bay Area winter. There was plenty of nectar for them, plenty of milkweed for them. And so clearly, on some level, the plants were playing a good role for the butterfly and their ecology. But in the future, who knows? We We need more research. I keep saying it.
We've been talking about a promising start to the Thanksgiving count of Western monarch butterflies with David James, an entomologist at Washington State University, and Emma Pelton, a conservation biologist and Western monarch lead at the Xerxes Society for Invertebrate Conservation. Thanks so much to you both.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Forum is produced by Tina Larberg, Susan Britton, Ariana Prail, Blanca Torres, and Grace Wan. Judy Campbell is lead producer for the 9 o'clock hour. Our engineers are Danny Bringer, Katie McMurrin, Brendan Willard, and Chris Hoff. Our interns are Kimia Akbari and Jennifer Ng. Our executive editor is Ethan Tovin Lindsay, and our chief content officer is Holly Kernan. Wanted to give you one last note that Trans Awareness Week is this week. Earlier, we talked with two folks from the Transgender District, and this weekend is the Trans Day of Remembrance. You can look it up and head out to that vigil. I'm Alexis Madrigal. This has been a great hour. Thanks so much. Stay tuned for another hour ahead with Mina Kim.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, the Generosity Foundation, and the Heising-Simons Foundation.
This is Barbara Leslie, President of the Oakland Port Commission. Oakland International Airport, OAK, is proud to bring you this podcast of KQED's Forum. When you're choosing your next adventure, the smart and convenient choice is to fly the East Bay Way from OAK to destinations across the USA and Mexico. And when you return home, tune in to KQED, always bringing us remarkable stories about who we are and where we live. Enjoy today's episode of Forum.
Take your Wi-Fi further with wall-to-wall Wi-Fi from Xfinity. With fast speeds and reliable coverage, home just got even sweeter with the Xfinity 10G network. Restrictions apply, not available in all areas. Actual speeds vary.